Hi, today's January 13th, 2018. This is MoViews Podcast number 237, and for once I have a title even before we start. Nuclear missile, anyone? So so as our fives of listeners may know by now, I live in Hawaii. And this morning we had a little bit of excitement. Before I start, I guess I should introduce people. In addition to me, Tata Gasawara, John Westfall's here. I've also got a special guest, Don Sorcinelli, and another fellow Hawaii resident, Ricky Lee, who's been on the podcast a whole bunch of times. This morning we had a little bit of excitement here, as you may know. The reports are 8:07. I got an alert about a minute later, about 8:08 a.m., that we had an incoming missile come in. I'll read it. I took a screenshot of it, you know, because I expected to live through it, of course. It said, emergency alert, ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill. And I thought, what? What's going on?
And it was in all caps.
I was going to say the same thing. That's the important part. That made all the difference.
It was yelling. Yep. Except for the emergency alert part, by the way, which is not in all caps.
Yeah, the message itself has to be in all caps. It's something that got carried over from NOAA things. But even NOAA stopped doing all caps messages.
That's right. I forgot about that. Hmm. And the weird part was, so I kept listening for a siren, right? Because there's supposed to be a new siren. Yeah. But there's no siren. Of course, this is a whole other thing, right? So we have a lot of problems with our sirens here. Mm-hmm. In fact, during the every first working day of the month at, I think, 11:45, they test the sirens. And a couple months ago, they started the new incoming missile nuclear threat warning siren, a different tone. And so I happened to be out at lunch, and so I whipped out my phone, and I started recording when the siren went off, except it was so, so soft. I could barely hear it above the everyday street traffic and, you know, people looking for lunch and all of that. And so I actually sent the video to our civil defense, which is now known as HIEMA, Hawaii Emergency Management Agency. Never got a response. Thank you much, HIEMA. But anyway, I told them, hey, you know, downtown Honolulu, kind of a lot of people that need to know about stuff when it happens. We can hardly hear your emergency siren. Anyway, thanks for that. And this morning, nothing went off. So that should have been clue number one, I guess, Ricky. I don't know. Did that tip you off right away, or were you just kind of like, I don't know what's going on?
When I heard no sirens, it was the, okay, well, we got the part A. Where's the part B?
And then I flipped on the TV to see if any news stations had anything. Of course, that's a joke. Nothing had anything on about anything. There was, however, the emergency crawl going across the top of the screen, Ricky. I think it's the top of the screen.
Depends on the station, but I think it's, I saw it on the bottom of the screen.
Okay. Either top or bottom screen, depending what you're watching, perhaps, which channel on all the channels. You could see us crawl. Saying exactly the same thing that was in the emergency text message to us. Mm-hmm. But nothing else. I think there was a basketball game on two channels and golf on another. And there was like nobody breaking in with anything. And of course, I have given up on terrestrial radio because most of the radio stations here are, I think, robot-driven these days. I don't think we actually have a lot of live DJs, which in old days, you know, they're a source of information during times like this.
But, yeah, I mean, that was part of the message. Check the radio, watch TV, listen for the civil defense stuff.
Right. So, you know, those all failed us, essentially. Then I went to Twitter, and Twitter was not that noisy. I mean, you know, there were a couple people saying, hey, I just got this alert, you know, be aware.
Well, I posted straight to Instagram, is this a joke? With the screenshot of the message.
So. Yeah, it seemed really weird. And then I started thinking, right? So this is chewed up about 2 minutes of time doing all this stuff. And then I started thinking, now they told us it's about 20 minutes for a missile to go from North Korea to Hawaii. It takes about 5 minutes for them to determine that it's actually en route. And then it's about 15 minutes to actually hit us. I just wasted two or three of those 15 minutes. What do I do in the next 12 minutes, you know? And I said, well, I better let my wife and daughter who are on the mainland right now know. And so I tried to call them. And, of course, the lines were just, you couldn't get through. At least I couldn't get through. And I have AT&T and Google Fi. But, you know, nothing got through. Then after a couple of tries, I finally got through. I let them know what's going on. I think, I don't know if they were, I don't know. I still didn't know it was a hoax at that time. So I just kind of let them know what was going on. Tell them I'd keep them updated. I'd send them a text message and stuff. Because I figured that would still work, even if voice cut out. The other thing is that I got the emergency message on my AT&T phone, an iPhone, but nothing on Project Fi. You said you got something though, right, Ricky?
Oh, I got it in surround sound. My Project Fi went off, my two T-Mobile phones went off, my Ting phone went off, and then my the other thing I had on Verizon went off. So, yeah, it's perfect surround sound alert system.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Well, anyway, for me, Fi didn't issue anything till well after the all clear was given. So, not quite sure what happened there. But in any case, that's what happened to us here. And then finally, I think some MSNBC or somebody may have had something on television. I don't think CNN picked up on it till much later. And I think Fox also picked up on it pretty early.
Actually, CNN had one of your representatives on about 30 minutes in, okay, saying it's a false alarm.
Okay.
Before there was the official false alarm notification, which I guess they now are saying was 38 minutes after,
right,
after the initial.
Was it Tulsi Gabbard? Sorry, was it Tulsi Gabbard?
I think
it might have been. It might have been.
And by 30 minutes past, you sort of know it might be a false alarm.
Right.
Right.
That's not what you want to be hearing. You'd want to be hearing this a false alarm much sooner.
Right. And after 15 minutes had passed, and I think I still didn't know it was a hoax at this point, I didn't feel like I was glowing or anything, so I went outside. And I went to go check on my neighbors and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we knew that it was a hoax. But, a mistake of some kind. Not a hoax.
I found out about the same time as Tulsi found out through my own channels. And, you know, Hawaii being Hawaii, everybody knows everyone else. I was seeing people on Facebook and Twitter going, my auntie said that their son was at work, and they said that work at HPD, and it's a drill, or, you know, it's a false alarm. So,
right,
you know, the coconut wireless still worked faster than the official 40-minute later text.
I know, seriously. And, of course, you know, had this been an actual missile, 38 minutes after the alert, we'd be glowing.
Yeah. No, I can't even imagine, as I was sitting watching this from a distance, thinking to myself, how many fails am I witnessing simultaneously here? How many different ways can something be wrong? Never mind the initial false alarm, but the sequence of events afterwards were and I guess you guys have been, this is something that's obviously, especially in the last 6 months, there's been more effort put into the system, supposedly, at least that's what they were trying to say. And I'm going, where was the effort put in the last 6 months to shore up the system? It now makes, I would anticipate it makes any thinking rational person anywhere in the United States who sits and watches every week while their favorite show is interrupted by a test of the emergency broadcast system starting to say, well, that's great, but what happens when push comes to shove?
Right,
you know?
Right.
I mean, my question more along the lines was, whatever the interface is, and I teach, you know, human factor psychology from time to time, is there not a confirmation?
Yeah,
that's the question.
You know, yes, there is. There's multiple confirmations, but you also have to remember the system was built for speed, not for security.
Right.
And from what I understand of what they were talking about and my own experience there, they were on the last screen, the one that, you know, right, you know, the last confirmation before you push it out. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not making excuses for them. Mm-hmm. It was bad, but then I could also see how it got to that stage. I don't understand the excuse about the shift change, because why would you shift change in the middle of a drill? But yeah, I don't know. That was one of the excuses, that there was a shift change and the incoming shift didn't know what the outgoing shift was doing, so they hit the button.
And someone just sat down and hit OK instead of cancel.
All right, let's hit OK.
What? It's like, yeah, that doesn't make sense.
No, they didn't have an okay or cancel. They had a yes, no, or cancel, and the cancel button actually performed a yes. You know? Yeah. So we flash back to 1990s GUI interfaces.
Yeah, abort, retry, and fail.
There you go.
I'm not sure which one I need to hit on this one. Yeah, it's interesting to think about it from that perspective. I obviously, my story about finding out about this is very boring in that I was working on things this afternoon and had taken a break from looking at my computer or my phones or anything. And so by the time I found out about it, it was also by the time everyone found out it wasn't real. So in retrospect, I didn't have to go through the flurry of emotions and wondering if my weekly podcast was not going to be happening anymore.
I did think about you guys, by the way. I thought, you know, if there's time, I will send you a cancellation notice.
In his final act.
Yeah. I could just only imagine what the cancellation message would be.
Or you can do podcast 209 part two. Here's the password for Podbean.
it was funny because how it caught my attention was I was watching something else on TV, but I looked at my phone and there was I happened to be looking at Twitter and there was a tweet that didn't have a screenshot yet. But the way somebody referenced it, and I can't even remember what it was, made me go, what? And so I cut over to immediately start switching channels to news stations. And that's when I came in just as, I guess, like I said, we didn't get the official yet, but we were hearing on the air, oh, no, no, no. And I'm going, what? Again, I'm going, what are they talking? What? It was so surreal to me. And and considering events recently, when I say that something's surreal, it shouldn't be anymore. Nothing should be surprising anymore. But
John, I've stopped taking screenshots of headlines that I thought I would never see again because I'm hard going to be filled. Seeing them. You know, yeah.
Your hard drive filled up.
Yeah,
I know. I just, and it was, there, you know, a million things run through your mind at that point. You know, that's what I'm thinking about. And yeah, Todd, one of those thoughts was, I guess John and I might have to prepare for another session without you hosting, but I knew you'd do everything to stop that. I said, if Todd can manage to overcome all of this, he will, just to keep us from doing a podcast without him.
The total communication failure that we had here was just amazing.
And the only way you were getting communication that seems like it was somewhat accurate was social media.
It was Twitter. Let's be honest. Twitter. It was Twitter. Yeah. Yep. It wasn't Facebook. It wasn't, I'm not religious, but heaven forbid, Google Plus.
Yeah.
You know, well, it wasn't LinkedIn.
I think back to 2 years ago when there was a shooting on my campus. During that event, the only way that I got up-to-date information was Twitter, and then usually about a second later, I'd get an official email. Our communications group at the university was sending out messages on Twitter and then copying and pasting them into emails to send out to the distribution lists. And that's actually the point at which I pretty much swore off all televised news.
Really?
Because not only was it so inaccurate, it also was just such a ploy, in a sense, to get ratings. All of a sudden, you know, what I had always suspected became very clear, especially since the day after, the first day that we had classes again, we actually had reporters on campus harassing students just trying to get them to cry.
Yeah.
And that was the moment I thought, you know what, these people are, they always have the news last, and they're pretty much trying to drive a story, drive viewers. So I don't watch that. I look for Twitter now, and I look for other forms of social media, because that seems to be where I can get the most accurate, up-to-date information without just unabashed, I guess, fanfare.
All right. And that's not to say Twitter always has accurate information. You know, there have been a couple of notable info fails, let's call them.
once in a while, right?
That was one of the battles I had. Okay, I guess I should disclose. I think it was the 2012 tsunami.
Yeah.
There was a tsunami in 2012.
Yep.
I was working the communications for back then Governor Neil Abercrombie. So one of the battles I had was, you know, fighting the inaccuracies that would go up on Twitter, like, evacuate to this school. Like, no, wait, that school is lower ground than the other school we told you to go to. Wait, what do you mean cancel this? It's not canceled. You guys, just evacuate. But yeah, in some sense, it's faster to get, I hate to admit it now, since I'm on the other side of the fence, it's faster to get your information through social media. Because as you saw today, the delay, I understand what the people in the government side was going through, that they had to get the approvals from the various channels. But 40 minutes later, when a bomb drops in 12 minutes, that's just too late, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess my biggest disappointment in all this is, so we're now in 2018.
Right.
And when you mention about the media and coverage of events in real time, I can go back to 1980. I was living in South Florida in Miami when the Liberty City riots occurred. And I now look, that's 1980. So we're talking about, my gosh, 38 years ago. And I don't think the media has changed one little bit in their technique for trying to maximize viewership during these types of real-time events. I saw that, what you saw at the university, and both during and after, I saw the same thing in 1980.
Well,
you'd think by now, as we've evolved and we've devolved in certain ways, but you would have thought, at least in terms of this type of coverage by now, because it's so easy, so we discern between truth and BS as far as the actual event itself. We discern it so quickly thanks to social media, you'd think that we wouldn't see as much of this.
Right. Well, and by the way, I should say, we're not talking about, you know, the alleged fake news syndrome here, because it was the no news syndrome.
The alleged real news.
Yeah.
Same thing, you know, going back to the early 80s, the playbook hasn't changed. I grew up in Northern Ohio, and every time a snowstorm were to come in, I have never seen local weather stations attempt to scare you so much that you wouldn't even get up to go to the bathroom. You'd have to continue watching their channel the entire time. That was what I remember growing up watching, and it hasn't changed. I have friends that still live there that, you know, you now have an app on your phone that has hyper-local weather information, and you still have these groups that are going, it's going to be so bad, you better stay tuned in, we're the ones keeping you safe, and reality, they're the ones selling ad space, and they need you watching.
Yeah.
And I guess in all of this, the saddest reality of what we're talking about is there are so many potential sources for accurate information.
Yeah. Oh, we lost Don.
He dropped out.
Uh-oh.
That is so ironic.
We are apparently being monitored, and Don was about to reveal something important.
There are so many sources for accurate information, and then someone clapped right on the back of Don.
What's me? My hands are up. I didn't press the button.
We'll never know.
You know, one of the things that was really confusing I saw for people today, Todd, I know it's because you work for the state, but if you didn't work for the state, did you know that Civil Defense changed their name?
Yes. Haima?
A lot of people didn't know that. There were people arguing with Haima.
Yeah,
that Civil Defense hasn't spoken up yet. They're gonna wait for Civil Defense to say something.
Oh,
like,
I see. They didn't realize.
So there was a level of confusion added because the agency changed their name, and
this is a while back. By the way, it was well over a year ago, I think.
It was a while back, but still, yet times of emergency for decades, people were trained. Listen to Civil Defense.
Right.
So this other company entity suddenly steps in and says,
well, it's the same entity, just a different name.
Different name, but people don't realize that. And when they're panicking, they even more don't realize Haima is now Civil Defense.
Right. And of course, I call it Civil Defense sometimes too, because you know why it's easier.
Everybody still calls it. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't understand the name change then, and I understand it even less now, given what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Branding is super duper important. Yeah. And if you're not going to do it right, don't do it. I think Don has been allowed back on. Okay, so you're about to reveal to us a deep, dark secret before you're cut off.
And And conspiracy views now starts. That's right. The latest episode. Oh, I was cut off at them.
If we want to do conspiracy views, I've got that covered. But Don, what did you have to say?
Well, yeah. Now I'm kind of, you know, it's
now he's afraid to say it.
Yeah. I mean, no, we still don't have visual contact back, so he might have a big gash on the side of his head.
Yeah, it might not be him.
There we go. Let's see.
Okay, there we go. We got the video now.
Yeah. No, the more, I guess what I was getting to is it seems like the more sources of information we have available to us nowadays, it's the irony and the sad part of it is that we now have even more, a greater number of inaccurate forms of information. You know, we used to complain about having one or two inaccurate forms. It now seems like, and when we watch an event like this, where even the things that we really, really go to bed at night hoping we can rely on, like an emergency broadcast system, we now have just one more thing that makes us question. And it's again, guys, it's 2018.
Right.
You know, it's not like we're not, this isn't the Dark Ages. And yet we're still, now it's just more frustrating, you know, than ever before. And I just, it, today made me think about that. And it did. It didn't anger me. It actually saddened me to think that, you know, I don't know if who to trust for reliability. Not so much, you know, whether or not they're lying, but that they'll even get the information to us.
Right.
When it to be
and,
there,
and this so. Is not the first time this has happened. I mean, back in the, Ricky, I don't know if you were in Hawaii at the time, but in the 06 earthquake.
Oh, I was here. Yeah.
Okay, when we lost, when the whole island of Oahu lost power for over a day, at least where I was, it was over a day. Some people, it was a lot longer. But there was
downtown, so.
Yeah, there was no information anywhere until about 30 minutes after the earthquake. And I think K-59 came on, or, you know, one of the radio stations came on. I think it was K-59 because they were the only ones whose emergency generators worked. And then we started getting some flow of info, but we were in an information blackout.
Yeah, I remember that. I had to ended up going down to my room with my roommate. We sat in the car and listened to the radio because, yeah, that was before social media. So
right.
That's what we did.
I tell people the story about, and I wasn't there, but the big San Francisco earthquake during the World Series. I happened to be watching, at the time I was at my family's house, and they had the old-fashioned satellite dish that was with the transponders where you actually had to move it, you know, between, and I was watching a live feed that day for that game when that all happened. And it was amazing that we were able to, by switching channels on a satellite off of what, you know, transponder channels, we found the first feeds to realize what was going on. And as I'm watching this, I'm thinking to myself, my gosh, because one of our other TVs in the house, we just had regular news, you know, regular TV coverage. And I'm going, why aren't they coming back? Why isn't somebody saying anything? I'm figuring out what's going on because people didn't realize. It took quite a few minutes before we started to find out anything, yet pretty quickly there was a lot. It was pretty apparent. I went to jump to one transponder feed where you could see the damage to the Bay Bridge. And, you know, and I'm going, okay, so what's going on? But it was, you know, and that day watching, as they were trying to cover that, I realized even with the big events, like you said, you know, earthquakes, big storm. The other thing you come across is when it's sudden and catastrophic like that, you realize the fact that even when they try their hardest, they're not, sometimes they don't do a very accurate job just because they're scrambling to figure it all out.
Right. And, you know, it's not even the fast moving ones. So for the most immediate and fastest no warning problem we have are earthquakes.
Yeah.
That happens. It just happens. There's no warning. And then we're trying to find information. The second one now, this was never used to be an issue, but now it's an incoming missile. We have 15 to 20 minutes, right? 15 minutes after we actually hear a warning.
Yeah.
And then there are things, you know, there are normal things like hurricanes and, well, I guess tsunamis would be next. You'd have a couple hours notice.
Yeah, that just made me laugh when I was realizing you're right. Earthquakes happen immediately.
Yeah.
Missile strikes are within half an hour.
Yeah,
with minutes. And then the tsunami, which used to be the next biggest threat, hours. At least 8 hours if it happens.
And storms are days. right? Yeah, and yet we still right, and yet even tsunamis, it's really difficult. I remember I was doing some consulting for what used to be civil defense back in the, what was it, the 08 earthquake? I mean, 08 tsunami, you know, the one that Chile, was it Chile?
Oh, yeah.
And I remember I sent an email to the folks I knew there at the time. I don't think they're there anymore. And I said, hey, I hope you guys are okay and, you know, I'll be able to ride this through the night, because it happened late in our evening and we're waiting for stuff to happen. And he says, oh, and by the way, the buoy between us and Chile is down. We don't actually know what's happening right now.
Yeah, so, you know, that happened in the 2012 earthquake, too.
Yeah.
The one that happened off the coast of Alaska.
Yeah.
The one buoy that was between Alaska and us was under maintenance.
Yeah.
So know the news were just trying to generate, like, they were trying to get eyeballs onto them, but like there was no information from our side, government side. You know what I mean? Because there was actually no information. We had to wait for the wave to hit
the next buoy
closer.
Yeah.
Yeah, the next buoy.
You know, and the funny part is, here's the strange, you know, but true thing about all these things we've talked about. We have come a long way scientifically in doing a lot, you know, when it comes to earthquakes. Yeah, we can't predict them, but we can start to get better ideas about them. Storms, even in the past 30 years, our accuracy, while we still complain about weathermen, major events, including, we left off the list, tornadoes. Remember, it wasn't that long ago when you were lucky if you had 5 minutes.
Yeah,
and now, don't get me wrong, you still don't have a lot of time, but usually you have the warning that says there's a pretty good probability you should be, you know, keeping your eyes and ears open.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we have more time. But great, we're doing so much better as a society at the scientific aspect, and then falling flat on our faces, communicating the information that we now get earlier and better, you know, more reliably than ever before.
And speaking of communication, before I wrap up this segment of our podcast, because I'm sure I've bored a lot of people already, but I did want to mention, you know, the one thing that people didn't talk about today, and they probably won't because nobody cares anymore now that it's over, is that even if, and let's just say North Korea for now, even if North Korea misses, and by misses I mean they're hundreds of miles off, we're still in deep, deep trouble here, because I've got a reference that I'll put on the show notes in the blog. But back in 1962, we actually did a test. It was a nuclear blast. 900 miles west, southwest of Hawaii. It was called Project Starfish Prime. Mm-hmm. And it was only a test by the U.S. government, right? Not by some, you know, hostile force. The EMP it caused, remember, this is 1962. There was no digital electronics to speak of, or not much. EMP knocked out microwaves, burglar alarms, you know, just all kinds of electrical lights were, you know, fritzed out. Yeah. Now, with everything digital, we'd be down. Yeah. I mean, back then, at least the vacuum tube radios worked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a vacuum tube radio anymore, although now I'm thinking about it. Because I think you can order one from Amazon.
I might have one somewhere just as a collector's item. I might, because my parents pack rat everything.
Yeah.
Don't worry, Todd. If you can order it from Amazon, they probably won't ship it to Hawaii.
That's right. It's probably not shippable here. Hey, and you know, John, I forget if we mentioned it last time, but you know, Don and Ricky, you might find this interesting. One of the things John and I learned from a mutual friend is that apparently Amazon is not shipping some items to California.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And I'm thinking, why? Can't you get it via ground in California? I mean, have they seceded from the Union yet? What's happening, you know? But it's not just us. It's not just Hawaii and Alaska that's, you know. And I've
discovered, a new thing with people who are now telling me that I'm wrong, because I've made a couple of posts that, like, okay, I don't know why everyone's panicking. If a bomb were to go off in downtown Honolulu.
Yeah.
Where I am located, just outside of downtown Honolulu, I'm going to be dead.
Yeah.
If it happened at Pearl Harbor, I'm going to be dead. Yeah. And people are now telling me, no, you're wrong. Look at this map from this website.
Right. If you stand 1 foot outside of the death zone, you're good. That's the way it works.
It doesn't matter. I'm still going to be dead. I'll just be irradiated.
Right. So I once worked on a naval base, and I remember getting the tour. And a friend of mine happened to work there, and so he was giving me the tour my first day of work. And he says, "Okay, Todd, you see this line, this red line here?" I go, "Yeah. Are you on this side of the red line, and you hear a siren go off, you run this direction." And I go, "Okay." And he says, "Why do I need to run that direction?" Because this red line is a blast zone for the jet fuel. So of course, you know, other side, you're good. 1 foot on the other side, you're good.
Yeah. Well, I lived for a while at the end of a peninsula that there was a nuclear power station about 30 miles away.
Right.
And we would get a calendar every year, courtesy of our friends at the nuclear power station, talking about, you know, evacuation if something were to happen. And we were always, the very tip of the peninsula was fine.
Okay.
If you were anywhere else on the peninsula, including all the routes off of the peninsula, you were in trouble. But if we just stayed where we were and someone in a boat came and got us or something, I guess we'd be okay. But I never felt all that.
And on the bright side, you wouldn't need flashlights at night anymore.
Exactly.
I was going to, if this had really been, you know, the real thing, my only advice I could have passed along was, having watched the 1980s film, the one that was on ABC about the morning after, it was about
with Steve Guttenberg,
Well,
classic movie.
If you duck under your dashboard, just like Jason Robards did, you will actually survive, as long as it's a 1980s K car.
Right.
You should be able to survive the nuclear blast. That was the only advice I could give at that point. It was either that, or if those who know from other podcasts, other episodes, Sven Johansson did suggest getting a 1950s desk so you could hide under it.
School desk.
Yes, school desk.
Yeah.
Duck and cover.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I might have to go buy a 1950s school desk and vacuum tube radio now.
I have a 1950s school desk at one of the houses I used to live at that my parents still, from time to time, are able to get to. So I could send it to you, but you're in Hawaii, so I don't know if I can ship it there.
Right, right. And, you know, and moving on now to another topic, since it's actually, you know, this retro tech, Meltdown and Spectre. You know, I have a TRS-80 Model 1 that is immune to both. Meltdown and Spectre, it is not affected by this exploit at the microprocessor level. So I also have a TRS-80 Model 100. Those of you might remember the first truly portable computer, in my opinion. You know, I don't consider it an Osborne. It was transportable. It wasn't portable. So, you know, I believe that, too, is immune to the ravages of Meltdown and Spectre. Now I asked John to avoid us discussing this in depth a couple of weeks ago because, quite frankly, I just didn't know what was going on, and I didn't think there was anything we could do about it. But since then, there's been a couple of, I don't know what the heck, microcode releases? Something got released. Sorry, it's not microcode. It's actual operating system level releases that works around it somehow, I guess by not allowing Ring Zero to talk. But the upshot is that it slows your system down, especially Windows systems, apparently. Have you guys run into any of this yet? Have you seen any updates I haven't been really watching carefully.
I actually have that I haven't applied yet.
Oh, okay.
A Windows Insider build. I'm on the fast ring, and the latest build supposedly has mitigation code. And that's what they're referring to it as, is mitigation code. Okay. And, you know, this is one of those cases where you can slice and dice this so many different ways, you know, when you talk to security people. You know, what's the, you know, what's the term, the security, the surface?
Attack surface.
The attacks are, one of the things that I thought was interesting that was brought up is to make the vulnerability worth anything, it really has to be highly targeted, which, when you think about it, if you really knew what you were doing and you wanted to highly target it, since it can't even be invoked through JavaScript, maybe I could do it to get it at a specific user. But when it comes to what you're getting for data, when you're going after just like a general web server or, you know, or something, you're going to get a lot of information and you're going to have to try and figure it out. So the risk yeah, it's there, but it isn't as dangerous as a very targeted at an individual. But even then, it's, you know, it depends on what you're you know, what that person's doing and what you might be able to glean from information. But all in all, it's the bigger thing.
Out, if people don't want information out there, they will take Don out and just replace him with a replicant that we've been talking to for the last 20 minutes. So that seems to be much more effective as a tool in order to get information or manipulate information than Spectre or Meltdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a matter of fact, my pod's in the other room that I emerged from for this.
Speak no evil, Don Bot. Speak no evil.
Yeah. But I don't know how I translated what you were saying was, so MI6 doesn't have to worry about it, but James Bond has to worry about it.
There Spectre. You go. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Especially if Bond does a lot of banking online. That's yeah. with, you know. No, but
and to be clear, he said banking.
Yeah.
Yeah, not banging, banking. Right. Okay.
Right. Bang.
Well, if Bond's doing a lot of that too, I mean, yeah. that, you might want to be. I mean, those websites can be just as compromised as any other. So.
Right, but so this is, you know, I collected a whole bunch of references regarding Meltdown and Spectre, and it's really a confusing mess, you know.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Microsoft issued a Windows patch to work around it, and then they had to pull it back because apparently it was blue screening AMD based PCs.
Oh yeah.
I think for all of the, when we're spending time and people are spending time going through pages and pages of descriptions of, you know, at a very technical level, to a certain extent, I think this is exactly what Intel wants us to do. Because the bigger picture in this was that 7 months ago, or potentially, some people are saying potentially even more, they've known about this issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they basically sat on it and sat on it and sat on it until they were about to release a chipset that wasn't vulnerable. As if to say, oh, yeah, there's been this problem. But, hey, if you move to this brand new chipset and buy a new computer, no problem.
Right.
That to me, and all the time we're spending talking about how do we fix it on older chipsets, I keep on thinking to myself, okay, great, we should have been having this conversation a while ago. And the fact that Intel really sat on it, and there's still the talk of stock being sold in days in advance of, right. you know, big chunks. Yeah. There's a lot to this that's not nice, and it has nothing to do with bits and bytes, but has to do with business. That's really not good. That being said, I hate to say it, but, you know, unless you want really slow performance, it may be time to upgrade machines. I've been milking a few PCs that maybe now it's time that I can't milk them anymore.
But, you know, if you've got a cloud farm or a regular server farm with, you know, hundreds or thousands of PCs, you're talking about a chunk of change.
Yep. I mean, it's a big issue.
And it's not limited to Windows. I mean, Linux is affected. Mac OS is affected. Mm-hmm. iPhone and Google is being a little cagey on Android, but I'm assuming they're affected. I did read that Frank McPherson, another frequent podcast panelist, mentioned to us that Raspberry Pi 3 is not affected because of the way its ARM processor was designed. You know, it's a low-end processor, presumably doesn't have the predictive capabilities that are in the higher-end devices, hence the lower cost. Yeah. And
Chrome OS is affected. There is an effect on some of the hardware now.
So, you know, basically, we all got to move to Raspberry Pi 3 for our desktop now. Cause
I already got one, so I'm good.
Can you make a Raspberry Pi 3 with vacuum tubes just to be doubly sure?
But it won't ship to Hawaii.
Oh, that's right. It won't ship. Sorry.
Because a vacuum tube would explode, right? In air transport. Yeah. So, yeah.
The Spectre will come out of them. Physically, right. A manifestation of evil.
So in any case, I've got a whole bunch of references from Google and Apple and Microsoft on this topic, and you guys can go figure it out. Not you three, but, you know, fives or
listeners. Yeah, don't be giving us homework, Todd.
But if you're interested, there is more stuff about, you know, this whole speculative execution vulnerability and all of that stuff. And it's really kind of, you know, it's very Battlestar Galactica to me, where, you know, we have to start using old tech to be safe.
Yeah, it's an interesting read if that's your cup of tea. I think the big takeaway from it is, again, because we're the worst offenders of this, getting down in the weeds, you know, so to speak, and looking at it at the bit and bite level. Yeah. But I mean, the bigger step back is that there's going to be some people running some hardware that it's time to not run that hardware anymore. And good, bad, or otherwise, it's going to be painful. I think I think one of the things that's been interesting, and we still don't see the actual benchmarks back from this because I'm hearing mixed messages on it. Yeah. It depends on what you do with your old hardware. I mean, if you're just using it to browse the web, is it going to be that bad? You know, they're saying no, but then again, we're not sure yet. So it'll be the next couple of weeks as patches are put out. You know, and we get mitigation code again, as we see. It's going to be interesting to hear to get the feedback.
I think Intel's advice to people is if you don't run any software on your microprocessor, you're good.
Yeah.
You're using it to hold.
There's no noticeable.
To hold the door open.
Yeah, you know, it's fine.
Keep the door open. Yep, fine.
Oh, I got a different advisory. I thought the advisory I heard was buy our 2018 models.
Oh, that too.
Yeah, they're all good.
Buy our 2018 models. Use our previous models as a handy loom for knitting clothing for mice. Right.
You can still use the case.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Okay, well, at any rate, moving on from this happy set of happy topics, CES. So I guess the biggest news of CES was a blackout. I'm really not aware of products that were announced during CES, to be honest.
There was that sous vide, that combination sous vide dishwasher.
A what?
Sous vide dishwasher.
So you can clean your dishes.
The weirdest combination I've ever heard of. Sorry?
So you can cook or clean in the same device?
Yes.
I don't get that at all.
I don't get it at all. It's supposedly using some kind of new heating element. That's why it wasn't CES. Sorry?
What if you make a mistake? I didn't mean to clean the chicken.
Well, it's clean now, so.
You know, it's kind of funny. I was thinking about it, and I can't remember where I heard, but somebody kind of made the same observation. It's funny how CES has gone and, like, there are these, it's almost like when we look at geological history and there are these eras. Mm-hmm. You know, we started out with Comdex and for years CES was primarily computers. Yeah. You know, I think the last couple of years were the, up until I'd say maybe last year sort of was the end of the TV era, where it seemed like everything that was being announced was around TVs, you know, bigger screens, newer technology. Now we've transitioned to the new era, which is the Internet of Ridiculous Things. You know, it seems like CES is just completely populated with, and I, from what I understand, without having an actual physical presence there, a major physical presence, Google really stole the show with all their partners in a lot of ways with you know, Google Assistant, but Google, you know, Amazon with Alexa enabled things, it almost has become the consumer Internet of Things show. And I guess that's probably what we're going to see a lot of for the next however many years.
I guess for me, now that you mentioned that, the only really newsworthy thing I remember from CES is that Cortana is going to play nice with Alexa.
They had actually announced that, I guess, about a month and change ago. Okay. That they made the first announcements on it. I hate to say it, but yet again, it's frustrating watching somebody take an early, strong lead in a certain area and then just let everybody blow past them. And Cortana is another example. of some of the early work with interactivity, including preemptive, where Cortana initiated conversations. Cortana had every edge, and now it's a two-horse race again. Come on, it's Google with Google Assistant and Amazon with Alexa. And in the end, it's going to be interesting to see. I think Google has the upper hand. It'll be interesting to see how Alexa keeps a strong dominant position in the long run, because I honestly believe that with everything else that Google has going for it in terms of what it can tie an assistant into, you know, from an AI perspective. And again, Microsoft, you think about it, Microsoft is also during this time frame, while Cortana has, you know, been flatlined, they've still all these back end services on machine learning, and all the stuff they're doing there is fantastic. But they once again just went from like it's like watching a race where somebody's out in the lead and then suddenly just starts walking. You know?
Yeah.
And you watch the rest of them come running up and go, run, do something, trip the other guy, just don't lose. And now it seems like the integration, I think that's great with Alexa, but I think eventually it'll be Cortana handing off to Alexa maybe, and eventually Cortana won't be much of anything anymore. I mean, how many skills does Cortana have? A couple of hundred?
Maybe.
At this point? Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Google announced they had, what, 1 million actions?
I don't understand that at all. But
I gotta believe that's variations on a theme. They took every iteration, like for one true action, they probably have the 10 ways.
We can provide the weather in this zip code, and the weather in this one, and the weather in this one, and the weather in this one, and that, like, yeah, yeah.
Well, but I'll tell you something funny. Well, not funny. Something I don't like about any of the various voice assistants is it still doesn't. It knows where you are because you tell it, right? I'm in this zip code or this location. Mm-hmm. But when you ask for weather, well, that's not true. I was going to say, for example, actually, this affects Don. I think you're near Salem, somewhere on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. There's also a Salem, Oregon. And there's a Salem, Massachusetts. And there's a Salem, New Hampshire, I think, right?
Yep. Yeah, that's where I am.
And so, you know, when you say, if you're not at your location, and so it knows kind of here is here, and you ask about the weather for Salem, it doesn't know which Salem you're asking for.
Yeah, I think the other thing that, and I mentioned it a couple of minutes ago, that I think is still the big area is sort of the preemptive, where your assistant is initiating the conversation rather than you always being the one to start. And by that, I mean, I give the perfect example. I don't mean that I've got some sort of chatty AI that's constantly annoying.
Like Max Headroom?
Right. I use as the classic example. And again, this is one thing that I still miss terribly is when you had Bluetooth set up on an old Windows, on a Windows phone. I could say old now at this point, because it really is getting long in the tooth, even for insiders. I have Bluetooth in my car. A text message would come in. Cortana would initiate the conversation. You've got an incoming text message. Would you like me to read it or ignore it? And then we'd have a back and forth, on this. And it was really great. That kind of, it spotted something that it was worthy of talking to me. Short of alarms and reminders, our AIs at this point aren't very intelligent until we start the conversation. Okay. Now, and I think that's the next big step. That was something Microsoft at least started to do.
Speaking of not intelligent, and I really like the Amazon Echo. Let me say that first, though. I think, I've got the Google Home Mini, I've got an Amazon Echo, and I guess technically I have Cortana on my Windows machine, which I hardly use these days. And, of course, Siri, Siri. But let me show you what I mean. So, Don, I am not anywhere near any of the Salems in the United States. Let me say this. Alexa, weather, Salem.
Right now in Salem, India, it's 69 degrees with partly sunny skies. Today's forecast has mostly sunny weather, with a high of 93 degrees and a low of 62 degrees.
It didn't even try for any of those United States. There are at least three Salems I know of in the U.S.
Yeah. No, it's...
Well...
I don't know.
I mean, what I'll gain from this is that Donbot is the brother of Cortana. Because, Don, you've been, like, rallying in support of your sister over there quite a bit since you...
But I'm the first person to acknowledge that I'm rallying and saying something that did something really well that isn't going to probably be around that, much longer.
That is true. Go ahead. Ricky.
My problem with Cortana, I like Cortana too, but every time I reformat Windows, she becomes dumb again.
Yeah.
There's no carryover between your different installs of Cortana. So it's useless to me to train Cortana on my desktop because she doesn't move over to my notebook. And then if I ever reformat my desktop, I'm back to retraining her from zero.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I think my favorite thing to come out of CES wasn't even at CES. It was a YouTube... blogger or YouTube videographer named Techmoan over in the UK.
Oh, yes.
He posted a couple of tweets around CES time that I thought were, one was amazingly prophetic and one was just funny. The funny one read, "I feel I should start pretending I'm at CES and seeing if anyone spots I'm faking it." And his examples were, the LG booth has a flexible 16K screen that looks amazing. Sony has a new 5D high-res headphones. There's a home assistant from Huawei that connects to Ask Jeeves, and Samsung's booth is on fire. So that was the funny one. But, you know, he posted another one that was things I'm looking forward to this year's CES that were just purely buzzword and you know, hilarity. And as I read this list, think about if you actually could see a company coming up with these, because I could see a company coming up with at least a few of these. Or laser trousers.
Oh, my goodness.
Robo flannel. 3D yogurt, a selfie pillow. I could totally see a selfie pillow coming out of someone. Wi-Fi razor, smart carpet, magic water, interactive blanket, a mesh toilet network. That was my favorite. The laser oven and the self-driving golf cart.
Well, you know, there was that. Did you see the
only thing he missed, the only buzzword he missed was somebody would invent a blockchain barbecue.
Blockchain barbecue.
Everyone brings a little bit of their barbecue together.
I did see that luggage that follows you around, but apparently doesn't follow you well. It falls over a lot and things like that.
I don't understand the point of that, though, because the airlines are banning smart luggage from going into holds. So.
No, these are the ones that you carry on. It's a carry-on, I think.
It's irritating. They just made it heavy.
I think what I've noticed about my own life, which is sort of disturbing, a lot of things, but I'll leave it to technology. For a long time, I was chasing the, if I only had this, my daily life would go so much easier. If I only had this technology, if I only had that. And in the last year, I've become very aware that I don't see as many gaping holes anymore. Mm. You know, my devices more or less work seamlessly with each other. I pull out a Surface tablet. I can swap it from desk to desk, no problem. Keep working on it here, there, everywhere.
Yeah.
My Apple Watch, my iPhone, my iPad, they all work together nicely. It's harder and harder for me to see those big gaps where I could look at a product at CES and go, wow, that is filling exactly a need I have, or even a need I didn't even know I had. Now, they're filling needs that I could go, I don't think I could ever have that need.
Well, there are two technologies that I feel would dramatically, and I say this in all seriousness, that I feel would dramatically change my life. One may be commercially available in my lifetime, and that's a self-driving car.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as I get older and, you know, get to the point where I can no longer drive, or I can, but I shouldn't. You know, that's going to be a life changer. And the other one, I really don't know if it'll ever happen, but, you know, it's kind of a dream. Something that can exercise you without actually exercising. You know, like that electrical muscle stimulant that Bruce Lee is alleged to have used?
Okay, yeah.
You know, except less painful. That would be a life changer, right? So the heck with these step counters and Fitbits I use. You know, just you know, strap on the old exercise whatever and, you know, go into a virtual world and you're done. So,
if you find out about that, let me know about that. I'll try that one out.
Yeah, I think we'll be good.
There was the half step. Somebody did create a VR gym. It's still, you got to work out, but I think they were using an Oculus Rift, so you're doing your gym work somewhere else.
Right. And of course, the Nintendo Wii had a, you know, had a pretty good... I mean, I never used it. I don't own a Nintendo Wii, but I remember one of our friends, John and Don, who I won't name because he hasn't been a panelist and I haven't asked his permission to use his name, but one of our friends, as you might recall, became a fitness enthusiast because of the Nintendo Wii exercise.
Okay.
And lost quite a bit of weight and became a runner in the real world and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, it could happen.
Yeah.
The only thing I wanted from CES this year was I wanted an Aibo.
What's it? Oh, the dog? Back. The Sony dog?
Yeah, it's back. And he's a lot smarter than he used to be.
Does he, like, make, like, mechanical poop now? Or what's the enhancement?
One of the things is, if you're a couple who owns an Aibo, Aibo will prefer one person over the other.
That sounds bad, actually. Doesn't it?
That sounds like if that happened to my wife and I would be rebooting Aibo. There would be no allowance for something that's technology enabled to not prefer me over someone who is not as technologically inclined.
I don't know. It just seems cute, and apparently we're at its 20th anniversary, so
yeah,
that's why they brought it back. I always wanted the original Aibo.
Me too. Never afford it. It was too expensive. So, it was well over $1,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So with all this talk about mechanical things and the likes, I just got a text from my real living, breathing son who needs a ride. So I'm going to have to jump off, guys.
All right. Thank you so much for your time,
Don. Boy, is he going to be sad when he realizes his dad's been replaced with a robot.
That's right. But I'll be a better driver.
There was a blackout, and we don't know what happened. And then Don appeared.
Yeah,
all
exactly.
All right, Don, thank you.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, and we're about the end anyway. We've been yakking for almost about an hour. And we're still here. That's the most important thing. Ricky and I are still here in Hawaii.
Yep.
Not glowing. At least Ricky. Let's turn off the light. I'm going to turn off my light. Nope, not glowing. So that's good. You know, that something didn't happen while I wasn't looking. I'm still kind of annoyed.
I'm just glad that we got the notice before I executed my death plan.
Oh, golly. But, you know, we laugh. But, you know, I wonder how many people had some kind of health episode, you know. Cardiac arrest or some
there
kind
was
of
that guy who had to choose between, he just dropped his son off at a restaurant.
Yeah.
And he had to choose between going back to pick up his son.
Yeah.
Going back home to see his two daughters who he left at home. Going to find his wife at work, or I forgot what the other choice was, but it was like, man, you guys really messed up. That is not a choice you have to make.
And, you know, I wonder if in the coming days we'll be hearing stories about people who literally, and I say this with no levity, had a heart attack.
Probably.
You know, because they were just so frightened.
And given our society, I wonder who's liable for that. You know, if the government, who has seemingly a monopoly on information, gives you misinformation that leads you to make decisions that are harmful or leads you to health episodes, it's not like you could just say, well, you should have listened to someone else or, you know, there's no
authority
behind it. This was an authoritative source. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. Any rate, I want to thank Ricky for coming on board on short notice to join John and Don and myself. I wanted to get another Hawaii perspective, you know, so you know it's just not me being annoyed. It's Ricky and me being annoyed.
For what it's worth, I ate one last bamusubi, and I looked out the window and said, I'm going to eat another one.
And it's funny, you know, because, I mean, I didn't actually eat anything until this whole thing was over. I wasn't really hungry. But I remember I said, you know, what the hell? I'm going to walk out in like a minute 15. You know, if it happens, it happens. And then I think by then, one of my neighbors told me it was a hoax because I hadn't gotten an alert on my phone.
Yeah.
I stopped watching the TV. Well, TV had nothing on at that point, so.
Yeah, I think that was the weirdest part. Not weird, but for me, I thought I would be more panicked. But
yeah,
after about 2 minutes, it was just like, well, if I'm going to die, I might as well not die hungry.
Yeah.
That was my thought.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you my funny story. So I thought, well, I better FaceTime with my daughter, you know, before the phone lines start going down. And so I said,
I couldn't get a hold of my nieces. So I had that thought too. But then, next thought is I'm not going
to
die.
So my hair was combed because it was still kind of early in the morning. So I went upstairs to comb my hair and I came, you know, I had my phone and I started calling her. But then the phone lines were all jammed up anyway. So I shouldn't have combed my hair, I guess. But
that's a big tip. Remembering from my emergency management days, those days, text. Don't use the phone line. Text because the phone lines are will run out of space. But texting and as long as you have an IP connection, you'll get out.
So texting is an out of band communications link unrelated to the voice phone line. So you are quite correct. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to text. I wanted to do a FaceTime.
I know.
Well, shouldn't FaceTime also that go over IP?
Yeah, but she was on the road, and so so she was getting her connection going through a switch through an so whatever. Because you know how FaceTime works, kind of weird, right? It needs a call setup before it actually hands over to IP.
Yeah.
So I think that was the problem, or it might have been on my end. I mean, it couldn't get a call set up. And so FaceTime.
And who knows? You were probably fighting against everybody who was Instagramming live the event. So.
The central office in my area can only handle 50,000 simultaneous calls. I mean, you know.
I was surprised I didn't jump onto social media to like Instagram my death. Honestly, I was surprised.
Here's the big flash.
I work in social media, so I'm like, Ricky? At the end of it, my coworker's like, you didn't even live stream. I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't.
Your first thought next time, okay, so now that we've had this scare, we know what we know. We kind of know things we should know better. Your first thought should be, I need to get the drone up in the air.
My first thought is going to call my sister, talk to the nieces one last time, then I'm going to go up to the highest place I can and watch the bombs drop. But and if I have my drone, I will have
Launch the drone and YouTube stream that sucker live.
And then if I survive, I'm going to get a fine from the FAA for like $27,000 for flying into
airspace.
But FAA won't exist anymore. So you'll be okay.
I should note, Ricky is a licensed drone pilot, so. Yeah, this has consequence for him.
It'll be a moot point. There will be no FAA to worry about.
Well, there'll be an FAA, just not one in Hawaii.
I don't know. If there's an attack on Hawaii, you got to think that we're not too close from everything else getting attacked. So. I mean, we could talk conspiracy views. Conspiracy views is saying that right now there is a smoldering third world.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that.
That tried something this morning and it went poorly for them. Yeah. But who knows?
Okay, folks. At any rate, we have hit the 1 hour mark a couple of minutes ago. I want to thank everybody for joining me, especially Ricky, who got here on short notice. Really appreciate it. And we'll talk next time.